Vivaldi's Winter Largo from his Four Seasons comes to you now with an invitation to attend this evening's Evening Under Lamplight, our 50th show. But who's counting? On Cambridge 105, community radio in Cambridge. Coming to you under Axel's care from the famous Roundabout Studios here in Cambridge, of course. And I'm your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And I've prepared for you, for us, this evening, a show with a question, a colloquial question, I suppose. What's coming down? I mean, I was just thinking about what to do on the show, and this phrase suddenly came to me, and the obliging guy I am, I just followed its lead, and what follows is where I was led, and where in turn I'll lead you. It's always good to have such a loose or broad or we might say metaphorical and poetic title, since it expands the more we attend to it, and it expands in ways we could not have predicted. I think I know what will follow in the next hour, but I certainly had no idea 24 hours ago when I started in on this idea. I hope you too will enjoy what will come to you in the next hour. Attend, then, to what's coming down this week on Evening Under Lamplight. Before we spend too much attention on the metaphorical senses of what's coming down, let's look at the literal senses. What is it that comes down? Prices come down, don't they, in sales and other attractions to get our business? Standards, too, come down. The hell with my principles, I want business. But we're being seduced again away from the literal. What literally comes down? Well, there's the street rhyme in the fourth chapter of Joyce's Ulysses, which our hero Leopold Bloom remembers. He'd overheard two sluts singing it one night as they walked along, linked together in the rain. Oh, Mary lost the pin of her drawers. She didn't know what to do to keep it up, to keep it up. It, Bloom ponders, them. Don't they mean that Mary didn't know what to do to keep them, the drawers, her underwear, up? Here's the young lady of a century ago, in days before elastic was universal, using pins to keep her underwear attached to her undershirt. If she lost the pin, her drawers would come down. But what a frail thing a mere pin is to hold your clothes and your reputation together. There's something a little casual about using a pin to keep them up, just as Martha, who has just sent Bloom a secret love letter, has pinned a rose to the letter. Very nice. But alas, the rose has no scent. An insufficient gesture, like most other gestures that come Bloom's way on that day. The refrain haunts Bloom, to keep it up, to keep it up. Is this an innuendo about his own sexuality? Are people questioning his own ability to keep it up? Several people taunt him later in the day about Blazes Boylan, who is getting up a concert tour for Bloom's wife, and also, as Bloom knows, is getting it up for his late afternoon visit to Bloom's wife. The multiple senses in which we can look at that little phrase, to keep it up, seem a long way from the simple, playful bawdy song The Ups and Downs, featuring Mickey the Drover Boy, like Bloom from Dublin. The song celebrates an occasion in older times when the girl's garter has come untied, as opposed to unpinned, and Mickey offers to tie it up for her. And then what? Here's Steel Eye Spam's version of the song.
As I was going to Aylesbury all on a market day, a pretty little Aylesbury girl I met upon the way. Her business was to market with butter, cheese and whey, and we both jogged on together, me boys, father our little all day. And we both jogged on together, me boys, father our little all day.
As we jog on together, me boys, together, side by side. By chance this fair maid's daughter, by chance it came untied. For fear that she might lose it, I unto her did say, oh, your cart has come and tied me, love, follow our little old day. Oh, your cart has come and tied me, love, follow our little old day. As we rode on together, me boys, to the outskirts of the town, at length this fair young damsel, she stopped to look it around. Oh, since you've been so venturesome, pray tie it up for me. Oh, I will if you go to the apple grove, follow our little old day. Oh, I will if you go to the apple grove, follow our little old day. I never did see, and we both jogged on together, me boys, father our little old day. And we both jogged on together, me boys, father our little old day. Oh, since you had your will and me, come tell to me your name. Likewise your occupation and where and whence you came. Me name is Mickey the Drover Boy, from Dublin town come by. And I live at the side of the ups and downs, father our little old day. And I live at the side of the ups and downs, father our little old day.
It's hard for us to understand today just exactly what was coming down for that pretty little Aylesbury girl. Beguiled by Mickey's charms, she retired into the apple grove with him and let him tie up her garter and do other things too, and now she's not sold her butter. That's her family's income, perhaps, for the day or the week. And as the song says, the losing of her maidenhead, it made her blood run cold. Might she be pregnant now? What about her reputation? And Mickey himself? He's gone, he's gone, he's gone, she said. But at least now she realizes he's not the lad for me, for he lives at the sign of the ups and downs. Lots of fun sometimes, but don't stake the rest of your life on him. More downs than ups in the long run. I've seen some earnest commentator informing us that this song is an early example of anti-Irish discrimination. Oh, if there had been nothing worse and nothing earlier, Anglo-Irish relations would be in fine shape. But it's true that this is the kind of Irish stereotype in popular literature, Mickey the lad seducing all the girls and then disappearing, that James Joyce was trying to do away with through his depiction of Bloom and Stephen Dedalus, two Irishmen far too complex ever to feature in a little folk ditty like this. Now here's another thing that might be coming down from the sky. Space invaders. Yes, all those science fiction stories about aliens coming down to Earth from wherever. Was the first story of this sort H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds? But Cyrano de Bergerac, in Edmond Rostand's play, at least pretended that he came down from the moon. The historical Cyrano actually wrote a book about traveling to the moon. In the play, Cyrano makes up on the spot a whole list of methods by which he first rose to the moon. Here are the methods. First, he takes his clothes off and hangs clear bottles all around him, filled with early morning dew. As the sun sucks up the dew, it also sucks up him. The second method is to place mirrors on the inner surfaces of an icosahedron, a 20-sided solid. The mirrors will then rarefy the air, which will produce the enormous thrust needed to propel him upwards. The third method requires mechanical skill. He makes a large grasshopper with springs of steel, fueled by sparks created by saltpeter. With that kind of ingenuity, he might put his mind to making huge clocks for display in showcase windows on King's Parade. The fourth method, since smoke rises upwards, is to fill a large globe with smoke and let it carry him into the sky, an early version of the hot air balloon. Fifth, he smears himself with marrow from a bull, Taurus, the lowest point of the zodiac, which the sun loves to suck up. That's what he says. I don't understand what he's talking about. The sixth method was to sit on an iron platform and then throw a magnet up into the air. The iron, attracted to the magnet, will rise up to follow the magnet, and as soon as the iron hits the magnet, you take the magnet and throw it higher, and the iron will follow. Thus, you can rise almost infinitely high into the sky as long as you have the strength to keep throwing the magnet. And the seventh and final method. It is founded on the idea that the moon draws the tides. He bathes in the sea and then lies down on the shore when the moon is shining. He puts his head in the direction of the moon, since the hair holds the most water, and then suddenly he begins to rise straight up into the air effortlessly. And which method did he use? None, of course. It's all made up. But he could have, you'll agree, could have used these methods, since they follow, plausibly, sort of, from various laws of physics. And then, of course, he would fall back to Earth when he was finished visiting the moon, coming down back to Earth, coming down. Our theme, remember? And let's follow this silly story with a silly song from someone called Sheb Woolley, another one of those zany comic songs from the early rock and roll era. It depicts the moment when coming down from the sky is the eponymous, one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people-eater. It turns out, though, that this creature is not a threatening monster, but just wants to join a rock and roll band. Not to play a sax, but to play hip tunes through the horn in his head. It also turns out, as you'll hear in a minute, that he's not a purple people-eater, but a purple people eater. He eats purple people. So you and I are safe. You see, it depends on where you place the hyphen. Punctuation matters, of course, as we all know here at Evening Under Lamplight.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had one long horn, one big eye. I commenced shaking and I said, "Wee." It looks like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me.
One-eyed?
Well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, "Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me." I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
"You, cause you're so tough."
It was the one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me. I said, "Mr. Purple People Eater, what's your line?" He said, "It's eating purple people and it sure is fine. But that's not the reason that I came to land.
I'm gonna get a job in a rock and roll band."
Well, this was old rock and roll, flying purple. A pigeon-toed undergrowth, flying purple people eater.
We're short shorts.
Flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me.
Woo!
Then he swung from the tree and he lit on the ground. He started to rock, a really rocking around. Was a crazy ditty with a swinging tune.
Sing a bop, bop, a burp, a lap, a loom, bam, boom.
Well, this was the old rock and roll, flying purple people eater. Pigeon-toed undergrowth, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
Purple people.
And then he went on his way, and then what do you know? I saw him last night on a TV show. He was blowing it out, really knocking them dead, playing rock and roll music.
music through the horn in his head.
Okay, that takes care of the funny stuff. Can we please get a little more serious now? Just a little, anyway. Our theme, remember, is what comes down. And so what else comes down? London bridges fall down, I suppose. But surely the most common things to come down are things like rain, snow, sleet, precipitation. A word I remember learning early on in school, the whole class feeling very important to be allowed to use such a big word. We all walked out at the end of school that day, looked knowingly up at the sky, and announced, "No precipitation today." And actually, there are many songs about casting weather eyes up to the sky, checking for precipitation. Let's look at a few. First, a song that's innocent and joyful, I think. "Soon It's Gonna Rain," from the musical The Fantastics. A very sweet song. Two lovers enjoying the coming rain because at least they can be together. We'll live and love within our own four walls. It feels to me that there's something holding this back from sticky sweetness, though. The awareness which the rest of the play acts out, that the lovers have to earn this kind of sweet togetherness. It doesn't just happen, but they need to pass through the painful transformation from innocence through experience. That is, the lovers need to pass through the rain before they can live and love within their own four walls.
war will bind it over with leaves and run inside to stay. Come run inside to stay, for soon it's gonna rain. I can see it, I can feel it. Run inside, and then we'll let it rain. We'll not feel it, then we'll let it rain. Complain
at the end
if it never stops at
then
all.
Then we'll let it rain. Why complain? We live and love within our walls.
Happily we live and love, no cares at all. Happily we live and love within our castle.
That was Kenneth Nelson and Rita Gardner singing Soon It's Gonna Rain from the musical The Fantastics. And here's another song about a weather eye looking out for precipitation. I think it's going to rain today. The song has been covered by Katie Melua and Bette Midler in versions that make it very poignant and sorrowful and heartfelt. But as we often do, let's go back to the actual writer of the song, Randy Newman, who gives us the sorrow, but also the irony. Where exactly are we in this song? What's coming down, in other words? Let me play you here the pared-down version with just Randy on the piano from his songbook album. It couldn't get sparser than this, no rising strings, for instance, letting us take from it what we can. Like all great artists, he invites us to do the work. But to make it a little easier to do the work, let me give you the words, but without comment. Just attend to the words, and then we'll come to the song in its fullness, or sparseness, perhaps we should say. Broken windows and empty hallways, a pale dead moon in a sky streaked with grey. Human kindness is overflowing, and I think it's gonna rain today. Scarecrows dressed in the latest styles, the frozen smiles to chase love away. Human kindness is overflowing, and I think it's gonna rain today. Lonely, lonely, tin can at my feet, I think I'll kick it down the street. That's the way to treat a friend. Bright before me, the signs implore me, help the needy and show them the way. Human kindness is overflowing, and I think it's gonna rain today. Overflowing.
and I think it's going to rain today. Lonely, lonely, tin can at my feet. Think I'll kick it down the street. That's the way to treat a friend. Right before me, the signs implore me to help the needy and show them. Kindness is overflowing, and I think it's going to rain today.
Randy Newman, I think it's going to rain today. It sounds like his mouth is right there at the mic. And here's another song about people who run and hide when the rain comes, but I don't mind. It's a song that comes out of John Lennon's hazy confusion, but owes its origin to the heavy downpour that came down on the Beatles' arrival in Melbourne, Australia. And to John's disgust at people moaning about the weather all the time. I can show you that when it starts to rain, everything's the same. When it rains and shines, it's just a state of mind. Can you hear me? John's LSD mind has grasped that all weather is one. Besides the words and the dreamy voice, scornful of the timid fools, we will also want to attend to the drums, which Ringo once said was his best recorded performance, and to Paul's bass playing, which Ian MacDonald says is sometimes so inventive that it threatens to overwhelm the track. The song goes out especially for Rev Steve in Linton, our local Beatles maven.
Thank you.
Axel's not sure if this was in fact Ringo's best drumming, but it's pretty clever nevertheless. And as if things weren't confusing enough, we have that famous ending in which the tape is reversed. No longer rain, but nair. Mighty significant. The next song speaks about changes in the weather, with hopes that things will become fine, but a fearful eye on the stormy cloud coming up in the distance. It looks like storms, but we quickly realize that we have crossed to the metaphorical sense. It's the times that will be stormy, not the weather itself. The song comes from the Kinks' ambitious Preservation albums, which we have heard from before on Evening Under Lamplight. Like the famous Ronnie Corbett, Ronnie Barker's John Cleese sketch, this song is sung by a simple working-class man getting by the best I can in this crazy, mixed-up, muddled-up world I live in. A middle-class sort of a guy, I'm not rich but I get by, pretending that I know just what I'm doing. And a well-bred upper-class chap who doesn't care much about this or that, even when he knows there's something brewing. They all agree, however, that there is trouble brewing. We think there's a change in the weather. We gotta learn to stick together. See the thunder clouds in the sky. I want to live. I don't want to die. It's a little ominous, so hold on.
But I get by pretending that I know just what I'm doing. I'm a well-bred upper-class chap. I don't care much about this and that, even when I know there's trouble brewing.
We think there's a change in the weather. We gotta learn to stick together. See the thunder clouds in the sky. I wanna live, I don't wanna die.
Hope all they want that good weather is going to come, but there are bad things coming down, notably Mr. Black, the smarmy Puritan who invokes a godly righteousness in his campaign to clean up the corruption, but aims to take over himself. A self-righteous revolution coming down the road in this nightmare story. And while we're talking about heavy things coming down, we should also look at the predictions of hard rain going to fall. That, of course, brings us to our Dylan piece for this evening, Under Lamplight, on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge. A hard rain's a-gonna fall is a prediction song. He sees all these omens and knows there's going to be not just a rain, but a hard rain. And so then what? Maurice Capel reminds us that the song was written after the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962 made everyone feel how near a nuclear war might be. Time is not running out, Capel said. Time has run out. A song written in response to one historical moment, however, runs the risk of soon becoming irrelevant. But this song, for reasons we might go into in a minute, lasts independent of any specific background associations. It can't be limited to any one situation. The great American broadcaster Studs Terkel confidently identified the hard rain as nuclear rain. But Dylan shot back, "No, no, no, it's a hard rain." He was always quick to step on any interpretation that limited his words. Stick with the words. Let them work on you. The song takes up the traditional ballad form of one person asking another a series of questions, the answers indirectly providing a kind of opaque plot we have to work out for ourselves. The form of the questions is something like, where have you been, what did you do there, and what will you do now? In the ballad Lord Randall, the questioner is the mother, and the son gradually reveals that he has been to see his lady love, who has poisoned him. What is he going to do now? He is going to die, but first distribute his possessions to his family and then leave the fires of hell to the lover. In the ballad Edward, Edward, the questioner is also the mother, but we discover the mother has urged the son to kill his father, and in the end he will go into exile, but first leaves for his mother the curse of hell. In Dylan's song, who is it asking the questions? Christopher Ricks, who's always very clever, and perhaps too clever over the 15 pages he devotes to this song, Christopher Ricks says, "Who is the mother who asks, 'Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son?' Mother Earth." In other words, some big universal questions are coming down here. Will you come with me through the lyrics? That way, when you hear the song, you'll be better able to attend what's going on. I don't think you'll pick up all the lines. No one can with a song like this as it quickly goes by. But you'll notice more lines than you might if we didn't run over the lines first. Besides, it's always delightful to share them together. Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Wait, let's consider that first line a second. A blue-eyed son? That is the most wholesome American stereotype. A good kid, or a once-good kid, who's now been around places and has seen what's coming down, and if his eyes are still blue, they're a haunted blue. Oh, where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. Wait, how can you be out in front of an ocean? And what's a dead ocean anyway? Don't ask. Or rather, ask all you want. That shows you've noticed, but don't expect an answer. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard rain's gonna fall. This turns out to be a catalogue song, and with no rhymes after the first 2 lines of each stanza. In the interview with Studs Terkel, Dylan said, "Every line is actually the start of a whole song. Line after line after line, trying to capture the feeling of nothingness. I kept repeating things I feared." So here we have 6 verbs with the subject I. I've stumbled, I've walked, I've crawled, I've stepped, I've been. Each verb is followed by a number of some sort. That traditional use of precise numbering we find in fairy tales and myths and other accounts of fabled journeys. Here's the second verse. Now, instead of asking where he'd been, she asks what he'd seen, and she gets for answer a list of 7 I saw statements. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? Oh, what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with their hammers a-bleedin'. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. There's an image that resonates much more today than it did in 1963. And it's a hard rain's a-gonna fall. Next, she asks what he heard. There are 8 things he's heard, but only 2 of them come across as I heard. The rest are just heard. Either things are too urgent to keep repeating I, or perhaps he's so mesmerized by what he's heard that he can no longer produce a full sentence. And what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder. It roared out a warning. Heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. Heard 100 drummers whose hands were a-blazing. Heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. Heard 1 person starve. I heard many people laughing. Heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. Heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard rain's gonna fall. And now come the specific people, much more horrific and mystifying, too. Oh, who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? Who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl. She gave me a rainbow. I met 1 man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded with hatred. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. And finally, the inevitable last question. After all that, what are you gonna do? He's been able to perceive that a hard rain is going to fall. Unlike the sons in Lord Randall and Edward Edward, this blue-eyed son has not been defeated by his experience. In fact, he's been strengthened, and in the short interval before the rain starts a-fallin', he's going to do what he can do best. Tell the world what's going on. Which, of course, is exactly what he's doing in this song. Oh, what do you do now, my blue-eyed son? Oh, what do you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-fallin'. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest black forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, where the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number, and I'll tell it, and think it, and speak it, and breathe it, and reflect it from the mountain so all souls can see it. Then I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain's gonna fall. There are many different versions of this song we might choose to listen to. I've chosen the version Dylan recorded as a demo, which has recently been released in the 9th in this series of official bootleg albums, called the Whitmark Demos. Unless you've very recently picked up this album, you'll not have heard this version. It's raw, just the guitar and the voices close up to the mic, rough and rustic, but letting some lyricism peek out in the bleakness.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? Oh, what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw highway diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with their hammers bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers, their tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. And what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? What did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers, their hands were blazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. I heard the sound of one person who said he was human. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? Who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. White man who walked a black dog. I met a woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. It's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue eyes? the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, where the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number. And I tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it, and reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. And I stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard rain. I'm gonna fall.
And so just when is this hard rain going to fall? Ah, that's the question. But also the temptation. Resist the temptation. Just be prepared for it to come down. Go out and alert others to what's going on. But don't make yourself ridiculous by offering any kind of specific prediction. To be too concerned with working out the future will, I'm afraid, land you in hell. Or at least in Dante's Inferno. Deep down in the region of fraud, Dante comes across the circle of the sorcerers and sees the fate of those who, acting as fortune tellers, spent their time prying into forbidden knowledge. Yes, officially, fortune tellers were condemned by the medieval church. But Dante is writing poetry, which, as we said about Dylan's song, rises above the specific occasion to something universal. Let's look at the way Dante describes these souls in hell to see what might be going on at a deeper level. Dante leans over the edge of the circular pit and sees below a crowd of people slowly walking along, but in a gruesome way. They are completely twisted so that their heads are facing backwards. They are weeping, and the tears are coming down along the cracks of their backsides. They seem to be walking forwards. At least, their torso and legs are walking forwards, but their heads are facing back. It's as if Dante is saying that predicting the future renders us as incapable of seeing where we're going as if we had had our heads screwed round backwards. These souls cannot see forward, but oddly enough, nor could they when they predicted the future. Dante doesn't doubt, I think, that they really could predict the future. Think of it like this. Suppose you know that tomorrow you're going to slip and fall and break a leg. What are you going to be doing between now and tomorrow? Worry about the broken leg? Take every precaution against breaking the leg? But the prediction says it's going to happen. You can't prevent it. Do all your shopping today? Take out extra medical insurance? Whatever you do, your attention will be on the future, not on the present. The present is the only real time, the only time you can perceive with your senses and use your will to make choices. The future, no matter how well you know it, is still only imaginary. You are thus as blind to what is going on at the moment, that is, as blind to the reality of the world, as if you had your head twisted backwards. That's their sin against the holiness of the present moment. Or as the Sermon on the Mount concludes, "Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." And now, while we're still in the context of the Divine Comedy, I want to read you two little prayers written by Robert Louis Stevenson for use in his house in Samoa, where he returned to the custom of his ancestors and held morning devotions for the whole household. Here is his prayer in time of rain, or rather, in a time when the dark clouds are impending. Literally or metaphorically, we don't know. Unlike Dylan, who defiantly goes out to tell the world, Stevenson simply asks for the inner strength not to be cast down, but to continue in cheerful courage and kindness despite the rain. And don't forget, in Samoa, when it rained, it was a heavy rain. We thank thee, Lord, for the glory of the late days and the excellent face of thy Son. We thank thee for good news received. We thank thee for the pleasures we have enjoyed and for those we have been able to confer. And now, when the clouds gather and the rain impends over the forest and our house, permit us not to be cast down. Let us not lose the savour of past mercies and past pleasures. But like the voice of a bird singing in the rain, let grateful memories survive in the hour of darkness. If there be in front of us any painful duty, strengthen us with the grace of courage. If any act of mercy, teach us tenderness and patience. We've just heard some of The Rain Tree Sketch by Toru Takemitsu. I thought that was a startling moment in that prayer, suddenly to have the image of the voice of a bird singing in the rain, an image to inspire us to let the memory of past mercies and past pleasures keep us heartened in the hour of darkness. Here's another prayer in time of rain, shifting to what we might call an ecological view of a time of rain. About 10 years earlier, Stevenson had written a short quatrain for his child's garden of verses. The rain is raining all around, it falls on fields and tree. It rains on the umbrellas here and on the ships at sea. And now, far off on a distant tropical island, Stevenson again casts his perspective wide, seeing not just rain on the human beings, but on all the various creatures around. This larger perspective ought certainly to move us to a more humble sense of our own position in things. Lord, thou sendest down rain upon the uncounted millions of the forest, and givest the trees to drink exceedingly. We are here upon this isle a few handfuls of men, and how many myriads upon myriads of stalwart trees. Teach us the lesson of the trees. The sea around us, which this rain recruits, teems with the race of fish. Teach us, Lord, the meaning of the fishes. Let us see ourselves for what we are, one out of the countless number of the clans of thy handiwork. When we would despair, let us remember that these also please and serve thee.
Dark clouds arise dark clouds are rising, thunderbolts are rolling, Master Jesus riding around with a rainbow round his shoulder.
There, with special thanks to Dale Steam Shovel, we heard East Mountain South, Rain Come Down, a clever and sensitive but short-lived group from about 7 years ago, whose chief members were Kat Maslick and Peter Adams. Here amidst the rain, they perceive Master Jesus riding around with a rainbow around his shoulder, who calls down to the seeker on earth, I suppose that's us, beckoning the seeker to come up to join the band of angels. I'm not sure what inspired this song, juxtaposing the rain coming down with the divine message, but I like its connection to the wonderful Advent hymn, Rorati Cheli De Super. This is an ancient hymn based on the Hebrew prophets. The refrain, Rorati Cheli De Super, et nubes pluant justum, is taken from Isaiah. Drop down, ye heavens from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. That's the message for this Advent time of the year, as we sit in desolation, lost, and fearing the storm clouds ahead, hoping that instead of a hard rain, there might come down from above some much-needed righteousness. While our whole society seems to be singing, Here Comes Santa Claus, we here, this evening under lamplight, take a minute to attend to other things that might be coming down, with this venerable Gregorian chant to lead us out of the show. So for all of us, both of us, I should say, here at Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Cambridge Community Radio, this is Robert Louis Abrahamson wishing you good cheer in sun or rain or snow, despite the commercial Christmas season. And till next time, buonanotte, carissimi. Patres nostri.
si foli un universi, et iniquitates nostre quasi ventus astulerunt nos. Ascondis ti faciem tua anonis, alisis ti nos il manu iniquitatis nostre.
Sanctus Israel.